October 16, 1962, began as an ordinary Tuesday until President Kennedy summoned his brother Robert with shocking news. U-2 reconnaissance flights had discovered Soviet missile sites under construction in Cuba. These weren't just any weapons, they were nuclear-capable missiles that could strike Washington, D.C. and kill 80 million Americans within minutes of launching. The missile stood just 90 miles from Florida, despite repeated Soviet assurances that no offensive weapons would be placed on the island. The world was suddenly at the precipice of nuclear annihilation. President Kennedy immediately assembled what would become known as the Executive Committee, XCOM, deliberately choosing not to attend all meetings so his presence wouldn't stifle debate. The Joint Chiefs unanimously recommended immediate military action, with Air Force Chief General LeMay confidently asserting there would be no Soviet reaction to an American attack. Meanwhile, Secretary of Defense McNamara advocated for a naval quarantine, arguing it would provide limited pressure that could be increased as needed. The debate wasn't just strategic, but profoundly moral. Could America launch a surprise attack on a small nation without betraying its own values? By Thursday night, a majority opinion had formed favoring the blockade approach. Robert Kennedy supported McNamara's position not from deep conviction it would succeed, but because it offered more flexibility than military action. Crucially, he couldn't accept America killing thousands of Cuban civilians in a surprise attack, an action he believed would haunt the American conscience for generations. Whatever military arguments existed for an attack, America's traditions and history would not permit such a course, Kennedy wrote. The shadow of Pearl Harbor loomed large, with several advisors noting that America couldn't become what it had once condemned. Former Secretary of State Dean Acheson argued persuasively for an air attack, presenting scenarios of Soviet forces backing down when faced with decisive American action. After hearing all perspectives, including confirmation that even a major air attack couldn't guarantee destroying all missile sites, Kennedy chose the blockade. He rejected trading American missiles in Turkey for Soviet withdrawal from Cuba, though this option would later prove crucial. Despite facing perceived Soviet deception and aggression, Kennedy insisted on a response that maintained America's moral standing. With the decision made, Kennedy scheduled a televised address for Monday evening, October 22nd. Through personal intervention with newspapers, Monday's stories only reported an upcoming serious crisis, preserving the element of surprise. The diplomatic efforts proved crucial. The Organization of American States unanimously supported the quarantine, presenting the Soviet Union with united Western Hemisphere opposition. Dean Acheson secured French President de Gaulle's support without even showing photographic evidence, while Chancellor Adenauer's backing prevented Soviet attempts to divide America from Europe. Meanwhile, massive military preparations proceeded. Missile crews on maximum alert, troops moving to Florida, 5 divisions placed on alert, 180 Navy ships deployed to the Caribbean, and B-52 bombers airborne with atomic weapons. The Pentagon prepared for a potential invasion requiring 250,000 men. Before his televised address, Kennedy faced sharp criticism from congressional leaders demanding stronger military action. At 7 p.m., he calmly announced the discovery of the missiles and implementation of a naval quarantine on offensive military equipment bound for Cuba. The next morning, as Russian ships approached the quarantine line with a submarine between them, tension peaked. At 10:25 a.m. came the crucial report. Russian ships had stopped dead in the water or turned back. Throughout the crisis, Kennedy demonstrated remarkable attention to detail and concern for avoiding unnecessary escalation. When intelligence revealed American planes in Florida were lined up wingtip to wingtip, vulnerable to a single attack, he immediately ordered them dispersed. Against military advice, he permitted the Soviet tanker Bucharest to proceed through the blockade, giving Khrushchev more time to consider. "We don't want to push him to a precipitous action. Give him time to consider," Kennedy said. "I don't want to put him in a corner from which he cannot escape." This nuanced approach, applying pressure while leaving room for diplomatic resolution, characterized Kennedy's management of the crisis. The administration maintained constant contact with Khrushchev through multiple channels. Kennedy sent a letter expressing concern about potential misunderstandings while hoping for peaceful resolution. Khrushchev's response called the blockade outright banditry and the folly of degenerate imperialism, though analysts noted signals of potential flexibility. Meanwhile, reports showed accelerated missile site construction in Cuba, with CIA estimates suggesting operational capability within days. Secretary McNamara warned of up to 25,000 casualties in any invasion attempt. Kennedy confronted his advisors. If we do invade, by the time we get to these sites, after a very bloody fight, they will be pointed at us. On Friday evening, October 26th, a pivotal message arrived from Khrushchev. While several ex-com members dismissed it as erratic, Robert Kennedy found it passionate but coherent, recognizing its emotional intensity stemmed from genuine fear of nuclear war. For the first time, Khrushchev officially acknowledged the missiles in Cuba, explaining they were deployed to protect Cuba from perceived American aggression. Khrushchev proposed that if President Kennedy pledged not to invade Cuba and lifted the quarantine, the removal of missile sites would then be an entirely different question. This gained credibility when coupled with a back-channel suggestion through ABC reporter John Scali that missiles could be removed under UN supervision. However, Saturday morning brought different terms. Soviet missiles would be withdrawn only if the United States removed its Jupiter missiles from Turkey. This infuriated Kennedy, who discovered his previous directives to remove these obsolete missiles had stalled in NATO bureaucracy. The militarily insignificant Jupiters had become a crucial diplomatic bargaining chip. Kennedy responded strategically, directing Robert Kennedy and Ted Sorensen to craft a response addressing only Khrushchev's first message. He also sent Robert Kennedy to meet Soviet Ambassador Dobrynin, warning that missile construction was accelerating and any interference with American surveillance would trigger immediate military action. The next morning brought welcome news. The Russians had agreed to withdraw the missiles under UN supervision. This breakthrough, after 13 days of intense negotiations, marked the most significant de-escalation of the Cold War. The crisis taught several crucial lessons. Private deliberation time proved essential, as rushed decisions would have been riskier. Gathering multiple recommendations created robust decision-making that identified flaws in proposals. And understanding your adversary's perspective was vital. Kennedy focused on how each action would affect Khrushchev, avoiding moves that might force Soviets to choose between humiliation and escalation. The resolution led to practical improvements in superpower relations, including the Moscow-Washington hotline and the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. Robert Kennedy recounted his brother reflecting on Major Rudolf Anderson, the U-2 pilot killed during reconnaissance, lamenting how it is always the brave and the best who die. Kennedy worried about wars starting not through intention, but through miscalculations and events spiraling beyond control. The Cuban Missile Crisis stands as both a cautionary tale of humanity's brush with self-destruction and a hopeful reminder that careful diplomacy, moral clarity, and understanding adversaries can pull us back from the brink.